What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer. How laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With AllTrails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with AllTrails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
It's Metal Shop's Backstage Pass here, and I'm actually talking with the guy who I was listening to his album Out on a Walk. Yes, I broke quarantine and walked outside. I was listening to the new Rotting Out record. We're talking with Walter Delgado, the vocalist of Rotting Out. First off, welcome to the show, and how are you doing, man? How are you staying safe and sane these days in this crazy timeline?
I'm doing good, actually. It didn't start off too good. In about March 15th, we played our last show before the complete lockdown in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And the day before that last show in Orange County, we played a double show. So we played two shows in one day within like 4 hours of each other. And so the next day on our last show, I woke up sore and like achy and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
And I just was not feeling good. You know, so we played the show and I actually felt amazing during our last set.
Nice.
And then that night I had the worst fever I've ever had in my life.
Oh,
and
no.
It lasted 5 days. Basically I got the virus.
Yeah.
And for 2 weeks I was just feeling like complete dog. So it was rough at first, so I didn't really care about the quarantine because I would have stayed in either way just because I didn't feel good.
Yeah.
I lost 20 pounds.
Holy crap.
I regained 10. Yeah, I regained 10 pounds.
Okay.
But with that, my sleep apnea went away. I was too big, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was like, oh, okay, I can breathe now when I fall asleep, so that's good. But other than that, I'm used to kind of just being on lockdown. Like, it's not like I have certain friends that are like, oh my god, you know, they're very social butterflies and they can't take being inside by themselves for too long. You know, to me this is easy. This is a very normal, very, you know, like, obviously, like, going to prison, like, you kind of like, it kind of breaks you in for stuff like this.
Sure.
I'm not stressful, like, I'm not stressed about things. I actually get more done because it gives me a reason to like keep busy.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been very easy for me. I just go out when I need food.
Yep.
I work out in the garage.
Okay.
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty set, actually.
Good, man. I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, obviously, it's a interesting training that you had along there for a situation like this. And I don't want to go too much into that, but I will talk a tiny bit about that later because there's a podcast that you did called Forum of Passion with a guy who I just spoke with last week, with Ace from Mutually Assured Destruction. And if you're not familiar with like Rotting Out and you want to kind of know a little bit about Walter and the Rotting Out story, first off, don't turn this podcast off, but put it on pause and then go to that one. Check it out, because that is seriously, I can't give that is like 5-star review as far as broadcasting, podcasting. That is an incredible interview. And he was said that he wasn't ready for how, you know, just like totally open you were. Is that kind of how you are? You're just like no bullshit. You just kind of like let people know what's going on. Has that,
if we're going to talk about certain things, I'd rather look it in the face. You know what I mean? I'd rather just stare at it, take it for what it is, good or bad.
Yeah.
And then just kind of accept it, you know? And so with this podcast, he had told me like prior to like, okay, like I might ask you about this, I might ask you about that. And I was like, okay, like, I want to talk about the record and talk about this.
Yeah.
Like, basically like your life story. I was like, oh, there's a lot of ugly in there. So, and I've come to grips with a lot of that ugly. So it wasn't difficult.
Mm-hmm.
There were some parts that were still very hard for me to speak, you know, into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been in and out of therapy for the last 4 years, so like, I'm already kind of like adjusted to like speaking the details about certain events or mm-hmm. like how things made me feel. You know, I tried to do my best to not be emotionally invested. When I was speaking on that podcast, I tried to just kind of like, you know, kind of like just by, you know, fact of the matter type vibe, you know, just so it wasn't like, oh, because if you definitely say it a certain way, it sounds like, oh, woe is me, you know what I mean? And I didn't want that, you know, I never wanted that. It was just kind of like, hey, these are the things that happened to me and they are what they are.
Well, something that I think is really cool, and it's something that if you listen to that podcast, you'll kind of understand the significance of this. At least I did. You guys recently put up, and I purchased one. You guys did the COVID masks to support women's shelters, 100% of the proceeds. And so I was just curious if you could kind of expand a little bit about why. In this time, it's important for all of the proceeds, because there's a lot of, you know, really good places you could be sending the money to. Why is it important for you personally to support women's shelters during this time?
So, you know, with the quarantine being in and, you know, tensions being high, you know, there's a lot of domestic abuse that already is happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably on the uprise more because, you know, women or men, you know, can't leave their house and they're dealing with their significant other who's probably a violent person or verbally malicious, you know, it comes in all shapes and forms. And, you know, there's been more and more calls about domestic violence and abuse. And to me, that hits home because that was the atmosphere I grew up in.
Yep.
So when we made these masks, it was like, oh, look, you know, I had a contact and they're like, hey, like, we're making really good masks. Do you want to make some rotting out masks? You know, make a buck or two or whatever. And, you know, we thought about, oh, that'd be kind of cool. Then we'd be like, no, that's kind of weird right now to just kind of like, at least for us, it'd be like, marketing off of it would be kind of weird, you know? So it was like either one or the other. Either we do it.
Sure.
Or we don't.
Capitalizing on a pandemic is kind of a weird look, I guess, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so I was like, yo, why don't we just donate all this? Like, all this going on, I was like, we're still where we are. You know, we're not being affected by actually making these.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely fine. You know, we'll put up our merch eventually at some point.
Yeah.
When we could get to it. It's in a lockout that we're not allowed to get to right now because of the quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and if people want to support, they can support us through that. You know, but this was more of a very intimate thing for me, because I grew up in multiple shelters for domestic abuse and child abuse, and so it just made perfect sense. Everything just made perfect sense with what was going on, and you know, if people wanted to support, they could have. You know, if they didn't, yeah, pass the word. You know, maybe someone else needs that type of, you know, attention. You know, maybe I'll be like, oh wow, this is happening to me. I'm glad somebody's out there like concerned with what's going on.
Absolutely.
The cool part about that is I think I actually tracked down the first shelter I was in. So I think it might actually go to the first shelter I ever slept in that took us that took me and my mother in during a really, really bad time.
That's amazing.
So that, yeah, it was.
That's full circle, right?
Yeah, yeah. Everything just kind of fell together very, very smoothly, and yeah. I was pretty stoked about that. We sold about 1,100 masks.
That's awesome. Holy
yeah,
crap.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited. Everybody, what's today? Today is, holy, I don't even know what today is. Is this 420?
It's 420, bro.
Yeah, it's May 20th. So everybody should be getting them this week, actually, because we shipped a lot out last Friday.
Hell yeah.
So thanks to anybody that supported, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I had to grab one and, you know, I'll represent Rotting Out and also give, you know, to a good cause. And, you know, it looks a little bit better than my, like, pink bandana that I had. You know, I looked like I was, like, rocking, like, a 2002, like, I was going to Hellfest in 2002 doing the Ninja Mosh. I was wearing that pink one, so.
Oh, man. So you're that old, huh?
Yeah, totally, man. I had a camo one. I had a camo one, and I wore, like, a hoodie, and I was like, man, it looks like I'm about to pick up change to Path of Resistance or something, dude.
You have a white belt, too?
Yeah, dude.
God damn it, dude.
Spock rock haircut? Yeah, dude. Dude, so we got to talk a little bit about the record, man. It's what I was jamming this morning. The album's called Ronin. It's out now on Pure Noise Records. First off, hell of a time to drop an album.
I mean, that was unintentional. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Totally.
It was supposed to come right at the end of our tour.
Yeah.
And then we were supposed to promote a fall tour.
Yep.
And we're supposed to do not a fall tour. We're supposed to do a summer Europe tour and a summer headlining tour.
Yeah.
But the way things are going, everything's kind of falling off completely. So mm-hmm. we're just like, okay, we take it as it is. You know, we're bummed, but we're like, okay, like there's a lot worse that could be happening to us.
Yep.
And so yeah, it was just like, oh, sick, right in the middle of a pandemic. So it's either people get hyped and they're forced to listen to it indoors,
yep.
or they just get distracted by real life situations like food and how they're going to pay rent and how are they going to make a living, you know? So it's, you know, anybody that listened to it, I'm very grateful for either way, because it's a really tough time right now for most people.
Well, this is an album that if you put it on inside, you're going to want to go out and take a run or take a jog or go outside on your balcony and do some squats or something. This is like a full on, this is a good workout record. It's a good, just like get that, that motivation running, man. This is like a great hardcore record. And, I mean, yeah, dude, I don't want to break it down too much or anything. I want people to check it out, but the album title is Ronin. And, so I'm just going to say that the definition for Ronin is a wandering samurai who had no lord or master. What is the significance of the title Ronin to you personally and like to the band?
So basically the whole record lyrically was, for the most part, it was different chapters of my mental health.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and certain things I have come to accept and certain things I'm afraid to accept. And so when it came to Ronin, when I was in prison, Bedard from Bane actually was writing to me, and he sent
That's
me
awesome.
An old 1970 manga comic book called Lone Wolf and Cub.
Oh, yeah.
And Lone Wolf and Cub was a Ronin, a wandering samurai, and his son. And they just basically were going around and trying, he was trying to like restore his honor and stuff like that for very cliche and, you know, honorable samurai story, which is actually what that movie, The Shogun's Assassin, is about. It's based off that manga.
Yep.
And so the more I read it, I started kind of looking at the details and like certain things and like kind of how isolated that character had become, even with a child in his, you know, as a responsibility.
Yeah.
It was weird because it was almost like I was both characters in a sense, where I'm now older and I need to really tend to this younger version of me that I neglected for so long, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
These traumatic experiences, these emotional like withdrawals and all these things that as I got older, I started kind of shoving down more and more, kind of keeping them in the basement, you know, because they were too hard to look at.
Yep.
And for most of my life, I felt like I was never in one place for too long. You know, I was moving from city to city, school to school, shelter to shelter, and you never really have friends. So I didn't really have a decent amount of friends. And by decent, I mean like at least 3 or 4.
Wow. Okay.
Till about like 6th or 7th grade.
Okay.
And by that time I was so used to being by myself that it was like, it wasn't even that big of a deal. It was kind of hard for me to connect with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. My oldest friend that I still talk to is Carlos, you know, and he plays guitar in our band.
Okay.
And that was since we were 14.
Wow.
And so out of all the people from that era, he's the only person I still talk to.
Wow.
So it's, I don't know, like I think I'm just adjusted to people just kind of coming and going in my life and stuff like that. And it's not like it's a bad thing or sad or anything. It's just like, oh, you know, like I'm so kind of disconnected to it, of mm-hmm. what it could possibly mean to some people, that it doesn't bother me, you know? And, it makes things easier when it comes to, you know, having to find the motivation, you know. Yeah. I don't need people like encouraging me and stuff like that, but it does become difficult when you have to sit with your own thoughts for too long.
Yeah.
And that's what Ronin was basically what it was.
I kind of got the idea of that, but I didn't want to put words into your mouth. So I appreciate you kind of extrapolating that and explaining, man. And, you know, just listen to the record and you can see there's some very raw and like vivid, you know, things coming from, you know, you listen to this record and it's, you know, you'd think like, oh, it's just, you know, all like, you know, I hate you and you know, anger and like, you know, all this kind of stuff. But no, it's like very personal record and, you know, just, Did it take a lot out of you, or was it hard to really put the pen to paper and write these very, I'm imagining, kind of sore or at least very raw, things?
So when we're working on the record, I did my best to not think about lyrical content.
Okay.
So, because I'd wander too deep into that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd be too distracted. So I needed to focus on the music first. I was like, okay, how is this song going to go? Even when it came to like vocal patterns, I didn't really think about what was going to be said, more about like, oh, how am I going to say what would be cool in this part of the song? You know what I mean? Like, oh, we could do something fun like this, or, you know, oh, this is what I'm hearing in my head, like this vocal pattern. And I'd like hum it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hard part was opening this little notepad that I kind of keep on me every now and then.
Yeah.
I won't put full lyrics in. I'll put a line in, or I'll put a memory in, or I'll even just put like the title of a song. So when we wrote Street Prowl, that whole record was written just by those two words.
Oh,
I don't
wow.
know why those two words came to me,
yeah.
but they made the most sense. And I literally wrote the whole record just based off those two words. And and it was easier because I could break it into pieces, into sections and stuff like that. With this record, I did something similar. The record was going to be called Angel City Ronin, but it was just, we narrowed it just something just simple, sweet, straightforward.
Yeah.
And I had already written so much that it was almost too easy to pick from. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was, I had enough ingredients that there was no way I could run short of anything to talk about at this point, especially with like the breakup of the band,
yep.
the prison sentence, mm-hmm. Therapy, kind of like taking new challenges on that I wasn't prepared for mentally,
mm-hmm.
you know, like being diagnosed with a couple things and still potentially, there might be some other things in there that I have been diagnosed with, and how am I handling that, you know?
Yeah.
Like the whole process, or even some really, really old memories that I thought I'd never speak on, you know?
Yeah.
And so once the music was done, I I have the same writing process ever right before I go in to do track vocals. I never write a whole song up until the night before.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I literally, I'll have ideas of the song, and I'll have, like, notes of, like, what things I might want to say in the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll sit in my car, and I'll drive to a part of San Pedro, like, basically the end of town.
Yeah.
And I'll just sit there, just put pen to paper, and 9 times out of 10, I have to shorten the song to make it fit.
Oh, so wow.
I have to, like,
okay.
Pick the lines that kind of carry the most weight.
Mm-hmm.
and tell the story in, you know, as best as possible. And it, this one was really, really personal. So it was very easy, but it was emotionally exhausting. I'd be crying in my fucking car. You know, I could, yeah, like, I had to stop writing because I dwelled way too deep in certain traumatic experiences. You know, at one point I had an episode. I got diagnosed with PTSD, so, like,
yeah,
when I dwell into certain topics way too much, it triggers things, and it's like I have to, like, ground myself, mm-hmm, and I have to breathe and all these things. And a couple of the songs did do that. But at the same time, that let me know I'm heading in the right direction.
Good.
Where I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're right. You know, I listen to a lot of hardcore records, and they kind of seem, there's nothing as personally invested, or there's nothing vulnerable that keeps my attention.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of my favorite records were when people were willing to expose things you never thought they'd expose. And
yeah,
I believe in that. I believe those records carry the most weight. You know, whether anybody gives a shit about them or not, I still think those records carry the most weight, because obviously everything revolves around the lyrics. Everything revolves around the story the band is trying to tell,
mm-hmm,
whether it's the name, where they come from, the style they're playing, and the story they're telling. And, you know, you can only say fuck you so many times.
Right, yeah.
You know, and yeah, we have one of those in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, even that, we have, like, I chose to make it a little bit, like, short and sweet, you know, because that story's been told countless times. On the other hand, my story isn't something commonly spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
It's common. That's the fucked up part. That people that have lived life like me are dime a dozen, you know what I mean? But the problem is nobody's willing to put it out there and,
mm-hmm,
and speak on it. And I think it's important because people feel like it's too heavy to talk about, or it's too personal, and, you know, they don't want to look at that. They don't want to think about those things. And I don't blame them. I was the same way. I didn't want to think about these things. I pretended like some of these things never happened, and I had forgotten some of, mm-hmm, them happened. But I didn't want to do that with this record. I was over holding everything in, and it was exhausting. And as soon as I put it all out there, you know, like, it helped. It was therapeutic. I could breathe a little better,
mm-hmm,
now. You know, I look back at the record, and I'm very proud of everything I wrote and how the record came out.
And just think about this, man. Like, you have that platform where you can get on the mic and you can tell your story, and maybe there are kids, you know, because it is unfortunately a common thing. A lot of people go through you know, family life and abuse and a lot of that negativity and violence. Imagine, you know, a kid just streaming your record or picking up the CD at the local record store and popping that on and just thinking, oh, it's just going to be a sweet hardcore record, you know, about the standard fare. And then they get that and they, you know, are transported in, oh, like, this guy knows, and this guy's speaking to my direct, you know, daily life. Like, that's a beautiful thing, and that is something that, you know, you putting that pen to paper and saying those things and being strong enough to be vulnerable and give that, you know, voice out there it's really cool, man. I just wanted to first off commend you on that, and also say it's just a killer record altogether.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. And you know, I just wanted to, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you do, you know, we all got stuff to do, but I did want to ask you about, so you guys broke up in 2015-ish, is that right?
Correct.
And
March 2015, yeah.
And then obviously a lot of things go on with you guys. I'll have a couple questions about that. But what did you guys, when did you guys decide to come back and not just do a reunion show? Because it'd be easy to just do a one-off reunion show, a reunion show here or there. But you guys came back. You're doing it. You just got off of, right before all of this lockdown stuff, you were going on tour with Acacia Strain. You guys are doing, you know, big things, put out a full-length record. What made you guys decide to come back full steam as opposed to just kind of dipping your toes in it?
Unfortunately, I'm a person of extremes.
Okay.
So
yeah.
It's all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had been talking about writing a record, and it was going to be very subtle. You know, we didn't know if we were going to release it ourselves
sure.
or Pure Noise still wanted to, you know, because we had broken up so long ago and all this stuff, you mm-hmm. know, so we didn't know if they were still interested. And, word got around we were doing the weekend thing, you know what I mean, where we would play like a couple weekend gigs
yeah.
and festivals and stuff like that. And then we were in Hawaii.
Awesome.
We played with Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh my
Hawaii,
god,
which was fantastic for us.
That's bucket list right there.
Yeah. And we were just sitting at our friend's house, and I got everybody was getting text messages from the same group of people trying to convince us to do the Knocked Loose Stick to Your Guns tour.
Nice.
And I was like, dude, maybe we could do the West Coast, you know, like we could probably do the LA show or LA Orange County show.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Like maybe we could pull that off because, you know, one of our dudes has a child, you know, we all had full-time jobs.
Yep.
You know, so we didn't know. And then, we decided we got together for dinner and basically like, hey, if we're going to do this, let's do this right. And if we're going to write this record, it would be now, you
cool.
know,
yeah.
like it just makes sense. Like marketing wise, mm-hmm. timing wise, like everything was already rolling. But now that we have this huge tour lined up, this would be the perfect time to promote all of it, you know, and basically reinforce that, hey, we're a band again. And, you know, yeah, people fall off and people lose attention or people grow out of the scene and whatnot. But that wasn't really my concern, you mm-hmm. know. And everybody was on board. We're like, yeah, you know, so we went from not playing, not touring and 4 years to doing an 8-week tour, which was our longest tour that we've ever done to date. We up until this pandemic, we had this whole year booked.
Good Lord.
But no reason to mope about it because everyone's in the same boat right now.
Yep.
At least every artist is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's hurting a little different, and it's okay. It'll pass, you know.
Yeah.
So, I was scared and I was excited at the same time to tour mm-hmm. again because I have way more injuries now.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
A lot heavier than I used to be. So I was like, oh, well, will things change? Will mm-hmm. do I sound different? Will my performance change? You know, can I even play a whole set every night like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so there was a lot of questions, you know. And will the dynamic of the band change, you know? And I think on this Acacia String tour, it was actually like the most relaxed tour we've ever been on as a band. Like the tour was wild and the tour was fun, but us as members, it was so relaxing. It's almost like we finally came to a point where we were just like, everyone was enjoying it exactly how it should be enjoyed.
Awesome.
And then the tour got canceled.
Yeah.
But that's life's kind of funny, you know?
Yeah. Real quick, I wanted to interject and say, so you, the way you say, like, I'm heavier now, I'm bigger now, I wanted to make sure that if anyone's listening to this and doesn't know what Walter looks like, he's not, he wouldn't say it, but he looks like a WWE wrestler. Like, this dude is huge. When he says he's a little bit bigger, he doesn't mean, like, he's fat, out of shape. He means he's, like, bigger. Like, damn, dude. Like, this guy could lift some like he could be go up against Brody King in a wrestling ring, you know, like he's a big dude.
Brody King did merch for us for like two tours, by the way.
Oh,
way
back there you day. Go. Hey, yeah. before he was a big wrestling legend, right?
yeah.
Dude, so okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that, man. Like, is lifting and like working out like a super important thing for you? And like, when did you get into like making that like a priority?
So I got into lifting circa 2012.
Okay.
Or 2013. Full time. 2012, I was kind of like dabbling with like powerlifting and stuff like that. I was lifting weights ever since high school.
Sure.
But like, you know, typical like gym goer, like, oh, you know, I'll just get on the treadmill, you know, maybe do some curls, maybe do some benching, and then, you know, go home.
Yeah.
And then, we did a tour with Foundation in Harm's Way.
Oh, okay.
I was talking to James from Harm's Way.
Yeah.
Oh, like he was telling me more about powerlifting, and I was like, "Oh, sick! I'm gonna check that out." You know, like that sounds fun. You know, I don't really care about being like ripped or anything.
Yeah.
I just really wanted to be strong.
Yeah.
And that's basically what that's the foundation of powerlifting. And then once I dove in, I never came out, man. And even now, like, the only reason I got to end this thing at one is because I got to go bench today.
Got to do it.
But honestly, that routine and that, like, that training has carried over into my life a lot. Yeah. I'm patient when it comes to things. I take failure not so much as a blow, but as a learning curve.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because in this sport, it's, you don't always, there's no winning, you know, there's always more weight.
Yeah.
Like, so it's not like, oh, sick, I did it. And then, oh yeah, but can you do 5 more pounds? You know?
Yeah. Pushing yourself.
It's always that, it's always like that weird chase the dragon thing mm-hmm. you're never going to catch. I think it does a lot for my mental health. I know when I'm not training, I fall into depression pretty bad. I fall into just like just not being motivated as much mm-hmm. or not thinking as clearly, not being as positive, not having a good routine.
Yeah.
My diet will turn it. I won't eat, or I'll eat like complete dog. Mm-hmm. You know. So to me, training is like, I know it's now vital to me. I'm not. Oh, I don't know. I got injured on this last tour. My knee, I tweaked it on stage. Uh-oh. So, like, I don't know where that's putting me. But before the Acacia Strain tour, I was the strongest I've ever been.
Nice.
And it was exciting because it's, you know, it's that patience pays off.
Mm-hmm.
I think we live in a generation where everybody wants instant gratitude. And they lost the slow grind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That like. Okay, one brick a day.
Mm-hmm.
One brick a day. You know, brick by brick. Let's do this brick by brick. And everybody's trying to build a house, and they want it tomorrow. And they're scrambling to get it done, and stressed out when they realize, you know, if you just lay down one brick at a time, it'll all come together. You know. And that's how I have to look at things now, you know. As much as I was like, oh, I don't got a job, I need to go look for a job, oh, I'm stressing, you know, if I just, you know, every day just look a little bit, I'll find something,
yeah.
You know, or something will just actually fall in my lap like it did, you know. I got a job opportunity that I'm going to do while
hell yeah.
under this quarantine that, you know, it's like, oh, cool, this kind of just fell in my lap. That's cool. Like, oh, one less thing I need to stress about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew if I was just a little bit consistent with it, it paid off. And training taught me that, you know, lifting weights taught me that.
That's awesome.
I never cared about the aesthetics mm-hmm. of training. I think it definitely, I don't want to say it helps, especially being like a hardcore band, but it definitely gives our band like a more aggressive look, I've noticed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, I met you a few years ago when Zabalba and Alpha and Omega came up to Metal Shop, but yeah, I gotta say, like, for as nice as you are on the phone, like, you're kind of intimidating to approach. So just hitting you up, I was like, I hope he's not, like, you know, gonna be like, you know, angry or something. But no, man, like, that's just, it's just the way you look, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's also important when it comes to the things I have to say in my band, because I grew up being told I wasn't allowed to cry. Boys yeah. don't cry. You don't mm-hmm. do that. You know, my dad would call me a faggot or a little bitch and do things like that when yeah. when he'd hit me or when I'd feel sad about things, you know, like, and that type of shit, like, really sticks in your head, man. It really, like, you adopt it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the voice is still there. And so you just, anytime you feel these, like, certain emotions of vulnerability, you just swallow them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't acknowledge them. And you put up this wall. And I did that for too long. And I think it's important that I'm able to talk about these things so that doesn't get reinforced in some kid's head. You know what I mean? I don't know what women endure, you know?
Yeah.
And it's definitely a show in this world when yeah. it comes to women trying to make it. I just know what I endured,
yep.
you know, so I can only speak for myself. And I know that if someone like me told me it was okay to just be a little vulnerable,
yeah,
that, you know, maybe it would have helped. Maybe it would have listened, you know, maybe it would have been enough. Because I look like this fucking stereotypical jock, you know, I yeah. look like I'm fighting every week. I got no fucking front teeth, you know, I look rabid most days.
Yeah.
And you know, but then, like, I also don't want to fall into that weird stereotype that all I know is, oh, yeah, like, eat meat, lift weights, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I try to carry myself as well as possible, especially when I talk about being vulnerable.
Totally.
And, you know, letting people that feel they have to keep up this machismo attitude their whole life, that they don't, that it's okay, you know, that that's the shit that's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not somebody calling you names. It's not your dad calling you names. It's not people thinking you're weak or something because you back out of a fight. No,
yeah.
it's that internal shutdown that's going to ruin your life. And it's the shit that was ruining me.
Yeah. Damn, getting heavy here, but I appreciate it, man. I gotta ask you. So, it is something that you touched on the Forum of Passion podcast. And, so after, your band, played your final show, you did, go to prison for about, was it 18 months or so?
Yeah, it was 18 months.
18 months. So you mentioned on the podcast, and I just want to ask you, you said that it could be the best thing that happened in your life. Could you explain that a little bit or kind of, you know, kind of touch on that a little bit?
So up until that, I thought I was perfect.
Okay.
I thought there was nothing I could do wrong. I knew myself better than anyone. I was fine. I had accepted the thing, at least I thought I had accepted the things that had happened to me, that I had moved on and I had let them go.
Yeah.
No, all I did was I just buried them so deep, I was in denial. That's what had happened. And going to prison forced me to open that box and look at each thing and lay it out on the table and go, these are mine, and I need to figure out what to do with them. And I honestly, I wouldn't have not done that if I didn't go to prison, if I didn't have the opportunity to be, you know, to get therapy. And, you know, because nobody wants to admit they need therapy, you know.
Yeah.
Most people don't. Because it's almost like, at least to me, I saw it as, oh, if I went to therapy, that means the old man won. That means he left his impression on me so bad
yeah.
that I need to go get help. And he's still winning. You know, that's how I saw it. Instead of accepting what had happened
mm-hmm.
and that it did leave an effect on me, and then I can grow from it. You know, I can learn to manage it, and I can know what to do with it.
Yeah,
I didn't even know what it was. at least now there's a name to it, you know.
Yep.
And that's why prison was so important to me. It was I couldn't point fingers anymore.
Yeah.
Not like I ran out of people to point my finger at. You know, it was just me, cellmate.
Yep.
And you know, my thoughts. And at that point, you know, I found a program in there, and they didn't help me get through it all. They helped me open the door and help me walk through it.
Yeah.
And go, all right, you need to start working on these things. And you know, once I got out of prison, I got another therapist, and that one was more footwork for me. That's when it got real for me, where I had to analyze every single thing I do, how I treat people, how I talk to myself,
mm-hmm.
how I kind of skew things in my mind to make it fit for me, you know, so it makes me less uncomfortable. You know, I downplay my traumatic experience because if I see them for what they were, it'd be too overwhelming, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, I, you know, I shouldn't be doing that. I should accept it. I should kind of like grieve through it. And it was important. It was important. Prison gave me that opportunity to just stare it in the face and go, yeah. This is what's wrong with you. This is what happened to you. What are you going to do with it? You know? And that's what that was about.
Damn. Well, I appreciate you being open about that. And you know, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions here before we let you go and lift. These are a little bit lighter, so we can kind of lighten the mood a little bit. I talk to all kinds of musicians, from people from, you know, death metal to thrash to hardcore punk. And, you know, I always like to ask this question. So, Walter, if you could, what are four albums throughout your life that have made a distinct, like, positive impact on you?
Throwdown, Beyond Repair.
Nice.
Euclid Today, Can't Close My Eyes.
Okay.
Chain of Strength, One Thing That Still Holds True. And 10-Yard Fight, Hardcore Pride.
Nice, dude. Was that like, that sounds like it could have been like your first few hardcore records you even got.
Those were the first hardcore records that kind of showed me that hardcore wasn't specifically one sound.
Okay. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Because, you know, you have Throwdown Orange County, you have Chain of Strength, which is also Orange County, but sound nothing like Throwdown.
Yep.
You have Youth of Today from New York,
yep.
And you have 10-Yard Fight from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see hardcore as just this heavy, like, mosh thing anymore.
Yeah.
It showed me that there was depth,
yep.
You know, there was insight. You know, especially with bands like Youth of Today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like with the veganism and the straight edge and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It was very informative, you know, for a 14-year-old kid. Like, why the fuck am I thinking about being vegan or,
mm-hmm.
you know, or being straight edge? Like, you know, like those are things that question normal life for where I came from, you know what I mean? Like, oh, why would I stop drinking? Why would I stop eating animals? Things like that. I'm not vegan or vegetarian, but it was something that, like, oh, wow, it made me question that. It made me question the things I did,
yeah.
The things I believed in, the things I thought were mine, you know what I mean? Even if they were mine at the end of it all, it still made me question it to kind of secure and legitimize that's what was meant for me. But yeah, those were the very first four records. And the only reason they popped off because I had this conversation the other day.
Nice.
That's why. There's a couple other records in there, but honestly, those are the ones that did it.
And they still, you can still jam those records to this day, right?
Oh man. One Thing That Still Holds True by Chain of Strength, like front to back. I remember, like, I can't remember dates or history. I don't even remember presidents. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I don't remember events. I there's a lot of dumb. I remember movies and I remember lyrics.
Nice.
And
okay.
It's one of those records when you read the lyrics the first time, they were permanently ingrained in your head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Think about how many bands we listen to and how many lyrics we remember.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and that's that band. That record is the one where all you need is the feedback at the beginning, and you mm-hmm. go, oh, I know what this is.
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
And that's what that was to me. Those records are still very hard and feel very, very close to, you know, even after, holy shit, what? That was 20 years ago. Holy shit, I'm old.
Walter, I gotta put something out there that's a bit embarrassing, but I do have to admit that, Get Sick Motherfucker, that is a song that we definitely put on in the car when we would videotape ourselves moshing in parking lots.
Okay, so I would talk shit on people moshing in parking lots, right? Because for the longest time, I thought that was a joke. I thought that was just something somebody made up. And then a friend showed me YouTube videos, and it was the cringiest I ever
saw.
Yep. I was like,
oh, yeah.
Holy f- white kids are weird.
Yep.
And
I'm that weird white kid.
Yeah.
Doing the get sick motherfucker.
But I had a band. It wasn't even a band. It was just like me and my friends jammed in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a local show, and I was probably 15.
Yeah.
And we covered that song. We just got equipment, borrowed equipment from whoever was playing at this local show, and we covered Get Sick. And that was literally the first time I ever sang in a band, and it didn't happen up until I got it rotting out again.
That's amazing, dude. All right. So final question here for you, Walter. If you could pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar.
Scar on my body. So there's a that's about probably 2 inches.
Okay.
And it's on my, hold on, let me see what side it's on. It's by, it's my upper right butt cheek.
Oh, okay.
And it's about 2 inches.
Yeah.
When I was 12 years old, maybe. Yeah, about 11, 12, I was hanging around with a bunch of bad kids in my neighborhood.
Uh-oh.
And there was a big incident, and, you know, like, we're just fighting, like, a bunch of other kids.
Sure.
And one kid pulled out a knife.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and he swung it at me. And, you do the thing where, like, you kind of lift your leg up.
Yeah.
Like, to, like, oh, shit, and, like, turn away from it. And I didn't feel it until somebody yelled that the cops were coming, even though the cops weren't coming. I think, or they, like, some lady just yelled at, oh, I called the cops or something, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so everybody just scattered like roaches.
Yep.
And then me and my friend was like, holy shit, you're bleeding.
Uh-oh.
I had no idea until he mentioned it. And then I started crying like a fucking baby. I was like, oh my God, I got stabbed. I was like, what am I going to do? And his older brother, and we went to it because we were at his house, because there's no fucking way I'd go to my house. I'd get the fucking life kicked out of me.
Yeah.
And I went to his house, and his brother was like kind of like a local gang member, and he just told me to put crazy glue in my ass.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, what?
Nice.
Yeah, just put crazy glue. And I was like, why? He's like, it'll hold it. I was like, what? He's like, yeah. I didn't believe it. Obviously, it's a real thing. And it burned so fucking bad. Mm-hmm. I was in tears, man. You would have thought, like, my fucking mother died or some shit. And he's just putting, like, crazy glue, like, in this small stab wound. It was, like, a small knife, too.
Yeah.
But the scar ended up being, like, 2 inches, and I was, like, bleeding out my butt cheek and whatnot.
Damn.
Yeah, I was 12 years old and doing dumb little shit, and I super glued my ass back together.
You know that hardcore song, Stabbed in the Back? You got stabbed in the butt.
Stabbed in the ass, dude.
Stabbed in the ass, dude.
Stabbed in the ass. It fucking sucked. That's the crazy part. Like, if he wouldn't have told me, I wouldn't have known that I got stabbed.
Yeah. Adrenaline.
I didn't even feel it. And then I think, like, I just went into, like, shock. I went to, like, panic mode. I was like, am I going to die? I didn't know anything about stabbing. I know anytime anybody got stabbed in an Arnold movie, they died.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anytime Rambo stabbed anybody, they died. Like, this, I was like, I don't know. Like, they weren't Rambo, but this sucks.
Am I okay?
Yeah, basically. But that's probably the most interesting scar I have.
All right, right on, man. So you heard it from him first. Maybe next time you see rotting out, you ask him to show you. I'm not going to guarantee he'll do, but, you know. But
please don't ask me.
Yeah, who knows? Is there anything you want to say to anyone who might be kind of in a weird situation? We're all kind of stuck inside. And is there any final words you want to say for anyone listening?
Read books, man. Like, as much as I love watching movies, and I read a lot of comic books, too.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I just picked up a book with no pictures in it, again. And, you know, every now and then I'll read something will catch my eye and I'll read it. And there's this different kind of, like, escape to a book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no screens, there's no nothing, you're just holding it, you know? Yeah. And even like a comic book, it limits your imagination because they already kind of display what they want you to see.
Yep.
Same with the movie. But I think when I pick up a book, it's kind of free game.
Yeah.
You know, like and it reminds me of like being a kid again.
Oh yeah.
Or when I was like in eighth grade and I read The Watchmen and like pages and pages of just like writing and no pictures. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been doing it lately and it's just like very, therapeutic in a sense. And, it doesn't matter what you read, just read something with no pictures in it, you know?
Yeah.
That's really, you know, cause most people can't get to a gym. Otherwise I'd be like, yeah, go lift weights or something, you know, go get strong or go fight, you know, not fight, but like go, you know, like learn to box or learn to jiu-jitsu or something like that, you know? Ride a bike. I don't even know if we're allowed to ride bikes right now.
In the meantime, exercise your mind, right? Read a book.
Oh, absolutely. You know, look at yourself more.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important. Just look at yourself. Are you happy with it? If not, okay, what can you do?
Yep. Change it up.
Who's that?
Walter, dude, thank you so much for taking the time. The new Rotting Out record, Ronin, is available now on Pure Noise Records. Dude, I thank you so much for taking the time, bro.
No worries, man. Thank you for having me.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. No matter why you give, your donations can do so much more. With a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360, you can potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free and give now or over time by donating cash, publicly traded securities, or non-cash assets like real estate and crypto. With over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together, DAF Giving 360 can help you make a greater impact. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.